The Week in Review with Declan Ralph, for stories you haven't heard anywhere else on the radio this week.
90.3, this is Near FM. Hi there, I'm Declan Ralph. Welcome along to The Week in Review. Now, as usual today, I take a look at the stories that affect us, but you won't have heard much about them anywhere else on the radio this week. I'll feature stories too about people and groups that you may know or are interested in. Indeed, you might even be involved with them. And of course, we'll have a look at the local stories that affect you as well. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the show, or you'd like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can contact me right now by text to 087 69 44 500. You can get through on that number while the show is on air, or you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. Now, coming up shortly is the local, the local stories with Ken. The new air traffic control tower has been officially opened at Dublin Airport. You can see it from many parts of the north side. Dublin is getting cleaner, apparently, as well. Dublin Port goes back inland again, retreating back from the sea, apparently. It's time for me to turn the other cheek. Interesting story. We'll find out about that in a few minutes from Ken. The Office of Public Work also announces the launch of the Phoenix Park parking strategy, which will be badly needed now that you can't park along the main drag there. And Evelyn, we'll find out who Evelyn is. Well, Evelyn is in a totally different gear to the rest of us. From its beginnings in 1980 as the Dublin International Organ and Choral Festival, Pipeworks has brought to Irish audiences a diverse programme of music making with the organ at its centre, fully exploiting not only the wonderful range of instruments to be found in Ireland, but the splendid cathedrals, churches and concert halls which house them. Find out more about this year's festival. I'm going to have a chat with the artistic director of the festival, David Lee, in about 10 minutes or thereabouts. Just after one, Sarah will be here to look at the local events taking place over the next few days. And after that, her Keys to the City, honouring the women who made Dublin, is a new book written by Lord Mayor Alison Gilliland and Clodagh Finn. Just four women were among the 83 people given the freedom of the city of Dublin since the award was inaugurated back in 1876, not today or yesterday, up to June 2022. And guess what? Three of those four women were granted the award this week. I think one was Kelly Harrington. And I can't remember the other two, but we'll...
Professor Mary Aiken and Ava... Walsh,
right, yep. Very good, Ken. Yeah, at least Ken knows the story he's going to talk about. And Ken is going to chat to the Lord Mayor, and we appreciate the Lord Mayor taking time out of her busy schedule to talk to us at about a quarter past one or thereabouts. Now, each week on the programme, we have volunteering opportunities as well, even. And these come from the activelink.ie website, where there are literally hundreds and hundreds of opportunities. And we'll be looking at those and squeezing them in before we finish the programme.
Local stories with Ken Kilbride.
So, Ken, the first story to talk about today is the new air traffic control tower. It's been officially opened. It's there for a while now, isn't it?
Well, that's the point I was going to make on it. It's 87 metres high. It's the tallest inhabited building in Ireland. And it looms over the older airport traffic control, which was built in 88 and was only 30 metres high. So I was sort of thinking to myself, you know, why did they build it three times as high? Then I was thinking back in 88, the planes probably weren't as tall. And the point you're just making there, Mary, and this is the thing, you know, it's open a while. So again, I would regularly climb up and down Holyhead. And what I've noticed over the period of time is that, you know, my son, who's working in Dublin Airport, has gone, that's the new tower, you know, 2 years ago. I go, no, we're too far away from the airport. Turns out he was right. Wow. Now, I know he's doing something else today, so he's not listening in, and he won't have ever made that admission. So,
right.
But I can actually say, yeah, he was right. You can see it from the top of Hoth, and you can see it from miles and miles away.
You can indeed. And apparently it gives them full 360-degree vision,
yeah,
over the airfield and other places as well. And of course, the new runway that's going to open later in the year.
Yeah, the north runway.
Yeah, it also gives them a good view of that as well. And of course, Dublin, you know, doesn't just look after the traffic in
Dublin. All the flights going over.
All the flights overhead as well. Yeah. You know, we have to think about those as well, getting them from A to B safely. Now, Dublin is getting cleaner. No way.
Yes way.
Yes way.
Yeah. We've been obviously following this over the last 3 or 4 years, to be honest. We mentioned this on a regular basis.
Doesn't seem like a year since we talked about it, mind you, but must be, yeah.
So, again, there's IBAL, which is the Irish Business Against Litter, and they do a survey twice a year. So, in their October survey, they found that Dublin's north end of city was seriously littered. So, that was 6 to 8 months ago. And it's now improved its rank to become littered. So the area's best result in years. So basically it's gone from the bottom of the list, number 40, it's up to number 38, and it's gone into a new category. So, you know, things are changing. It's not a huge big change, but there is a change, and it's gone off the bottom. Other areas in Dublin city centre were regarded as littered, and Ballymun sort of maintained its position as moderately littered.
Okay, well, at least things are getting a bit better.
So a bit better. Good.
Yeah, I can't believe it's a year since we talked about that, but it must be. Now, Dublin Port goes back inland again. Was it inland before?
It's starting to go inland. So this is their second development of an empty container depot as part of a 22-acre first-stage development of the Dublin Inland Port. And so Dublin Inland Port is located 14 kilometres from the port itself. It's just off the M2, so giving it direct access to the M50 and to the Dublin Port via the Dublin Port Tunnel. So coming online this week is a new 3.2 hectare acre facility, and construction will be completed by the end of the year. Now, when fully operational early 2023, the facility will have storage for 4,000 TEUs. Now, this was the bit sort of got me interested, was what's a TEU?
What's a TEU?
So it's a 20-foot equivalent unit. So this is the world standard measurement for containers.
Well, of course, you have 20-foots and 40-foots.
Yes.
And you think about
so,
the trucks.
Well, a 40-foot is actually two TEUs.
Two TEUs. So the TEU unit is 20-foot.
Yes, so.
We live and learn, Ken.
Now, the thing, how did we get to this height? They measured them in length.
Length, yeah. How did we get to this stage in our life not knowing what a TEU
that's
is?
Indeed, that's we didn't know what a TEU is because there's billions and millions of them all going around the planet. And that's the other thing about this. So, one quarter of all the TEUs going through Dublin Port are empty because of structural inefficiencies in the container supply chain created by trade imbalances, i.e., we're an island, we get an awful lot more. Containers coming
stuff
into the country than we do going
so
out.
So we import more than we export,
yeah.
Basically.
So there's a lot of them hanging around the place.
Yeah.
So they didn't know what to do with them. So what they said instead of, you know, having all of them storing them in Dublin Port, where they had seven empty container depots, they now only have four. They've built this facility on the outside of the city. So again, there's something like 840,000 TEUs going through the port and a quarter empty. So you think about it, you know, where do they? You have to put them somewhere.
Yeah.
Because you can't put them back on a ship because it costs money.
Uh-huh.
So you can't just send it back. So you have to do something with it. You have to store it, fill it up again, send it back out. So there's a couple of 100,000 of these things hanging around Dublin Port, and they have to find somewhere to put them.
Yeah, and I think I've noticed this, and again, I think that's there for a while. I just must be the M2 just driving. You see this big wall of
bigger
containers
wall
just have
them,
appeared
yeah.
in a field
yeah.
out of nowhere, and yeah. we're never there before.
That's it.
Interesting. There you go. We live and learn. Now, what are we turning the other cheek to?
So, this is the National Gallery of Ireland, and they're making a final call for submissions to the Zurich Portrait Prize, the competition of contemporary portraiture for young people aged 18 and under. And a couple of weeks ago, when we were handing out awards, we did mention the Texaco Art Competition, and there was loads of, you know, young people around the north side who won lots of prizes. So, this guy's is for you. So the gallery's inviting submissions across the island of Ireland from Irish artists living abroad. Now, the closing date for this, for the portrait competition, is the 22nd. So today's the 18th, you got 4 days. Now, in its fourth year, the prime aims to encourage interest in contemporary portraiture and to showcase the National Portrait Collection at the National Gallery of Ireland. Now, the winner of the competition receives the cash prize of 15,000 and will also be commissioned to create a work for the National Portrait Collection and then be awarded a further 5,000, so 20,000 in total. There's going to be two additional awards of 1,500 for highly commended works. So I'm thinking, you're on the north side, you're a young artist, you're very talented, you got 4 days to figure out, you need a subject. Who are you going to get better than me?
You're so volunteering, are you?
I'm volunteering to be painted.
Very
if
good.
Someone wants to do my portrait in the next 4 days, we can come up with some arrangement for the 20,000.
Well done. No problem to you, Ken. Very good. And a good subject he would be too.
That's it, yes,
you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Now, they have made a bit of a mess, I think, of the parking in the Phoenix Park. No one can get parked near the zoo, or yep. if there's anything on at all in Phoenix Park, it's just a disaster. What are they going to do? They're coming up with a new strategy, are they?
Well, they're coming up with a survey to find out what people want, which I think is just more customer engagement than anything else.
Yeah.
What they want to do is understand to make the park more exclusive for all visitors. Some people need to drive. They want to make sure that parking provision can facilitate all visitors. So they've a survey online to get your views in. So it started last Wednesday and it runs to the 8th of July. So it's been run by a company called Syra. It's systra.ie, or simply Google Phoenix Park Surveys. Now, again, I have a difficulty with this, much as the same as yourself. I live a little bit nearer to it. I live 10 kilometres from the Phoenix Park. It takes me 25 minutes to drive to it.
Right.
It'd take me an hour on the bus. If I get there in my car, I can go anywhere I want in the park.
Yeah.
If I get there in the bus, I'm stuck to the area near to the bus stop.
Because the bus can't get in the gates, remember.
And the bus can't get in the gates. So, not say I need to bring my car, but if I'm going to the Phoenix Park, my preference is to drive, and I'm a cyclist.
Yeah, true.
So, again, I think they need to find some way to square that circle, rather than just sort of saying, we don't want you coming, and we want everybody to stay in the metals. Because, you know, bringing four kids to the airport on a bike, or not the airport, to the Phoenix Park on a bike, or on a bus,
not a nice thought. No. And it is the biggest park in a city in Europe.
In Europe, yeah.
So, you know, surely there's a part of it where they could just find, you know,
and some more parking cars.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Makes it accessible for everyone.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not about promoting cars over bikes or over walking, or as you said, it's about just being practical about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, now Evelyn, whoever Evelyn is, you're going to tell us, is in a totally different gear than the rest of us.
So Evelyn Doyle, and she's from Malahide, and she's probably the oldest person to take part in what's a W2000 cycle event, which is ran sort of last weekend. So I went, I better Google Evelyn, do some facts checking here on your FM. So again, it turns out Evelyn has been doing this for a while. This is the 17th time she's done the W200. And going back to, you know, 10 years ago, she was doing 600 kilometre cycles. So the thing about it is they do two cycles. Now, W stands for Wicklow. 100 kilometres on the bike is doable for most people with a bit of training. The W stands for Wicklow, as we were saying, which means they go up and down mountains. I'm thinking, you know, even on a good day, if you can do 25 kilometres an hour, because you're going to go down a few of them, you're doing well.
You would.
20 kilometres probably an hour is probably more realistic. So you're looking at 10 hours in the cycle. You want to eat something because you've got to go, I'm not saying carbo loading, but you're going to want to eat. So it's a 12-hour day. She's 76 and she's done it 17 times.
Fair play to her.
But I'm going to throw out a challenge to Evelyn. You know, she lives in Malahide, so I went on Google. It's 36 kilometres from there to the start point in Bray. I want to know if she cycled there or not. And cycled home. One thing doing the 200 kilometres, I wouldn't know if she cycled and cycled back from Malahide.
You're a hard taskmaster, Ken. There's no doubt. Hard taskmaster.
Indeed, yes.
All right, very good. Brilliant. Thanks for all those interesting stories today, and definitely stories you won't have heard much about anywhere else on the radio this week, for sure. No doubt about it. Okay, we're going to take a short break for a little bit of music from Bobby Darin, and after this, I'm going to talk to the artistic director of the Pipeworks Festival, Mr. David Lee.
Girl, to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, where are you? With a love oh so true, and the hand that I can hold, feel you near as I grow old. 'Cause I want a girl my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Someday, I don't know how, I hope she'll hear my plea. Some way, I don't know how, she'll bring her love to me. Dream lover, until then, I'll go to sleep. That's the only thing to do till all my lover's dreams come true. 'Cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, dream again. That's the only thing to do till all my lover's dreams come true. 'Cause I want a girl to call.
This is Near FM. Hi there, I'm Declan Ralph and welcome back to the programme. I'm here with Ken Kilbride and Sarah Birmingham. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the show or you'd like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can get in touch right now by text to 087 69 44 500. While the show is on air, the text line is open, or you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at Near FM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. Now, from its beginnings back in 1980 as the Dublin International Organ and Choral Festival, Pipework has brought to Irish audiences a diverse programme of music making with the organ at its centre, and fully exploiting not only the wonderful range of instruments to be found in Ireland, but also the splendid cathedrals, churches and concert halls which house them. Now, to find out a little bit more about this year's festival, I'm delighted to be joined now by the Artistic Director of the festival, David Lee. Hiya, David.
Hello, good afternoon.
Great, it's great to chat to you, David. I think we've talked to you last year, or maybe it was the year before. We've certainly spoken to you before about the festival. It's back in person this year after a little bit of online stuff to try and keep things going. Are you excited for that?
Indeed, very much so, yes. It's been one of the great pleasures of the last few months, to, and particularly this week with the festival, to see everything back in person with live audiences and live music making. Obviously, as so much of life did, we had to migrate online during much of the last couple of years, and we put some, I think, some very, very interesting material out online, and streamed recitals and Zoomed talks and so on and so forth, which is a lot better than doing nothing, but nothing is quite the same as experiencing live music making in person.
Absolutely, and particularly in some of the fantastic venues, you know, that you have all of the events in. I mean, you started off on Wednesday in St. Patrick's Cathedral. Mm-hmm. You've had events in Christ Church, and St. Mary's Pro Cathedral, and today and tomorrow you're still lots of events on. So tell us what's happening today.
Yeah, so today we are decamping to St. Bartholomew's Church in Clyde Road, in D4. That's a church with a very distinguished musical tradition and an extremely fine pipe organ, which was last rebuilt and substantially enlarged about 20 years ago. So we have two events there. Actually, we have three events there. We have the young American organist Amanda Mole, who's generally reckoned to be one of the real rising stars of the organ scene over there. And she's going to give a masterclass at 3 p.m. Then she's playing a concert in St. Bartholomew's at 6 p.m. And then at 9 p.m. we have a slightly less orthodox event, if you like. We're screening the silent film The Phantom of the Opera, and another organist who's actually English originally but based in America for many years now, David Baskeyfield, is going to create spontaneously on the organ an accompaniment to this film. He's going to improvise the accompaniment as the film is playing.
Brilliant.
And that's at 9 p.m.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So he literally is going to watch and look and then play something that he believes is appropriate for that picture he's watching.
Yes, absolutely. And this was a real art form in the early years of the 20th century, before movies had their own soundtracks.
Yeah.
That the most affluent theatres would maybe have an orchestra that would accompany, but quite often it was just a keyboard player, a pianist or an organist, and there was a great tradition of spontaneously creating these accompaniments, and this even gave rise to a whole type of organs called theatre organs, which, in addition to your standard pipe organ sounds, would have all sorts of things like whistles and drums and chimes and goodness knows what.
Wow, Brilliant. So that's today. Tomorrow you've got some younger people involved with the Young Organist Platform in the Dublin Unitarian Church that's in town. Yeah,
that's right. Yes, it's part of our mission, if you like, is to offer to young organists both the chance to study with these stellar players whom we have coming to the festival. We had a very splendid masterclass from the Dutch organist Ben van Usten on Thursday, which I think was extremely illuminating for people, and then we have Amanda tomorrow, but also to give them a chance to play in the festival themselves. So that's at 2 p.m. in the Unitarian Church, which is just off St. Stephen's Green. And then, I suppose, our grand finale is that David Baskerville is having to earn his keep here this weekend.
You're working him hard.
Yes. He's, coincidentally, a very long time ago, David spent a year in Dublin. He was, immediately after he graduated, he was the organ scholar at St. Patrick's Cathedral. So it's very nice to welcome him back. He is giving the closing recital of the festival in St. Michael's Church, Dunleary, which itself, of course, has a very notable organ by Rieger, an Austrian firm, and its own venerable recital series, which with whom we're partnering for that event. So that's 8 p.m. in St. Michael's Church, Dunleary. And I should say, David is a multiple international competition-winning, prize-winning player. He's a very substantial solo career now, and it's a really, really, really very fortunate to have him here. So I'd strongly commend all of those events to your listeners.
Excellent, yeah. And they're good value, €15 or €12 for those unwaged. I had a look. It's on Eventbrite, the tickets are, and there's still certainly
indeed,
some tickets available, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. And if you want to discover anything more about any of those programmes, you can go to pipeworks.ie, and there's a lot of information about all of those events there.
Yeah, brilliant. Let's just talk about yourself, David, for a minute, if that's all right. There is probably nothing that you don't know about the organ. I was reading your own profile there.
I'm fairly sure that's not true. I think it's probably true of any subject. The more you get to know about it, the more you realise your great ignorance of large swathes of it.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Where did your interest come from in the beginning?
In the very beginning,
yeah.
Both my parents were musical, not professionally, they were both medical people. But my father used to play the organ in a local church, and I vaguely remember as a very young child being brought to the church with him when he would go into practice the hymns. And as he was a GP, he would sometimes have to do this when he was on call, and so he would. One of my earliest memories is that they would have these radio pager devices before the days of mobile phones or anything like that. They would have these radio pager things called the bleep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
His hymn playing, and, you know, he would be paged and then go off and ring in and find out the emergency organ. I suppose I must have just started messing around on the organ while he was gone, and it sort of sprung from there, really.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, I'm sadly I'm old enough to remember having a bleep or a pager at the time. So yeah, long before the days of mobile phones, younger people listening won't have a clue what we're talking about. also, but I mean, you've had a fantastic career. You've worked in many regions, many countries, in many fantastic venues there, reading about it. If you had to pick a favourite place that you've performed or a favourite organ, where would you say it is?
Oh my goodness, very difficult to say. Depends when you ask me, I suppose.
I've
particularly fond memories of playing Westminster Cathedral in London.
Yeah.
I remember there were several recitals there which I just luckily chose music that really, really suited that instrument. I remember playing a long time ago in Reykjavik, which was an amazing experience, not just for the organ, but just for the whole experience of visiting that country.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So it's been a career, obviously, that has taken you many places, as I said. So and it sounds like there that you have almost too many pleasurable experiences to choose from, to be honest with you. But it's great, and it's great that the Pipeworks Festival is back in the flesh, in reality. As we said, there's lots of things happening over the next couple of days. Today, the three events, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, all in St. Bartholomew's Church on Clyde Road in Ballsbridge, across the river from us here on the north side. And tomorrow, you're the one in town, which would be easier for people to get to, maybe from here in the Unitarian Church off Stephen's Green, and then your finale tomorrow evening. It's great, and well done on pulling it all together. And you might just give the website detail again, David, before we finish up.
Yes, so you can get tickets on Eventbrite and the Pipeworks own website, where you'll find a lot of detail about what's happening over the next couple of days, is pipeworks.ie.
Excellent, and we wish you the best of luck with the rest of the festival, and I'm sure you'll be back next year, and I'm sure we'll chat to you as well around about that time.
Indeed, many thanks for having me.
Thanks a million, David. Take care. That's David Lee there, the Artistic Director of the Pipeworks Festival, and just to remind you, all that detail again on pipeworks.ie. Now, coming up in the second half of the programme, immediately after one, Sarah will be here. We'll be looking at some of the local events here on the north side, events in Stony Batter and at the Helix, Smithfield Square, and many, many other things to tell us about. And also then at 1:15, Ken is going to talk to the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Alison Gilliland. And Alison has co-written a book with Clodagh Finn. It's called Her Keys to the City, Honouring the Women Who Made Dublin. And we'll hear all about that at 1:15. We'll squeeze in the jobs and volunteering opportunities as well prior to 1:30. So a busy half hour ahead here on The Week in Review.
90.3.
This is Near FM. Near FM.
Join Joe Keegan for the Groovalicious Radio Show every second Saturday from 6:30 p.m. bringing you all things soulful, soul classics, funk, disco and soulful house, every second Saturday from 6:30 p.m. here on Near FM.
Horselips to hair squid, rock to rap, punk to pop, and all genres in between. Join me, Michael Sullivan, every Saturday night between 8:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. for Irish to the Core. I'll be playing the best in Irish contemporary music from the past to the present. So don't forget, every Saturday night between 8:30 p.m. and 10 p.m, Irish to the Core on Near 90.3 FM.
Join me, DJ Pozo, at Near FM 90.3 Saturdays from May 7th between 3 to 4:30 p.m. in a show called Afro Vibes that will bring you a selection of African music such as Afrobeat and Amapiano, What a View. Also featuring interviews with artists and promoters that are both local and international, as well as events in the African show business scene. Get ready, set, and let's go.
I'm not playing with you, I'm not joking.
90.3.
This is Nears FM.
The Week in Review with Declan Ralph. For stories you haven't heard anywhere else on the radio this week.
And welcome back to the programme. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the show, or you'd like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can contact me right now by text to 087 69 44 500 while the show is on air. Or you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. Local events with Sarah Birmingham. Hiya, Sarah.
Hi, Declan. How are things?
Not too bad at all. So we're going to chat about some of the events happening, most of them here on the north side this week. Celebrate Pride of Place in Stony Batter. What's happening over in Stony
Batter? Yeah, I have to say there's a real sense of that Pride of Place kind of vibe, I guess, happen right across the north side over the next couple of days. Between, as you mentioned, Stony Batter has their own festival coming up. There's also events in Smithfield Square and right across the north side and right across town. So it's a great weekend to get out and about and explore. In Stony Batter itself, their festival there is at the heart of Dublin 7, and it's back this weekend with a 3-day neighbourhood and street festival taking place in the area from yesterday Friday until tomorrow Sunday. So right about now you can dive into music, food, sports, culture, community, family, entertainment, arts, climate action events, we say, as well, which is an interesting addition, and lots more, and everyone is invited to come down and join in the fun. The festival builds on the success of previous festivals there, as well as the work of the Stony Batter Pride of Place initiative, which won the award for Best Urban Heritage Village in 2016. Today is Festival Open Day, and to mark the occasion, local businesses there, schools, museums, churches, and even some private homes as well are throwing open their doors to members of the community to come along and enjoy a brilliant programme of events. Tomorrow's highlights include a family fun day taking place there in Stony Batter along Manor Street, and the area from Arbor Hill to Cavanagh's Pub is going to be pedestrianised there, so everyone can spill out and hopefully enjoy some sunshine, and also enjoy music and dance, food, stalls, talks, workshops, children's events and more. They really are packing a whole lot of heart into this festival, and backed by popular demand as well are Mrs. Doyle, Polly McGlynn herself, I believe no stranger to the area there, and Wolfstock as well, Dublin's favourite best dressed dog competition, and surely one of the best named competitions happening around Dublin too. Lots of the events there are free, of course, community focused events. There are some ticketed music events and things happening as well, and some limited spaces on some of the events too. So the best thing to do is go to stonybatterfestival.ie and you can get all the details there.
Yeah, brilliant. Lots of stuff happening, as you said. I was talking to Ken earlier out in my own neck of the woods in Lusk, right across the road in the field, if you like, in front of the house, is the Lusk Summer Festival. First time ever. It's on from 11 till 7 today. They have food trucks. They have bouncy castles, I saw there. There's some bands on in the afternoon as well. And lots of fun for a great family day out as well. And of course, Dave Daly.
So the North County is giving the north side of the city a run for its money there, I suppose.
And Dave Daly wasn't here in the Spotlight programme. Ken filled in, as you know, and Dave was down at the Courtlands Fun Day as well, just off Griffith Avenue. So he's helping out down there as well in his neighbourhood. So lots happening, and we're all sort of part of it all as well.
Absolutely.
Now, another festival is not just quite on the north side, but a Gospel Rising musical festival. That's something new, is it?
Yeah, so they have their flagship event taking place in Mountjoy Square Park tomorrow, and events happen across town over the next couple of days as well. It's quite a new festival, I believe. It had kind of started up, I guess, before the COVID kind of pause. But it's a Gospel Rising music festival, and it's bringing singing back to the city after that 2-year break. It's a social weekend, fun, energetic. There's workshops, social events, and that outdoor concert is taking place there at Mountjoy Square Park tomorrow, and it's all about showcasing many talented gospel choirs right across Ireland, across Dublin, and in pockets and places and villages across Ireland that you wouldn't even think now have their very own gospel choirs, and they're all converging for a whole lot of fun, no doubt, to spread joy and positivity of singing, and to get everyone involved as well. So it's all about gospel music, whether you're a seasoned performer or you just sing in the shower or you fancy yourself as the next sister act. It's for everyone, and it's just a whole lot of fun. So as I said, that flagship event, Super Soul Sunday, they've called it, taking place in Mountjoy Square Park from 12 until 6 tomorrow, and that day is going to feature just lots and lots of local gospel choir performances, community group choir performances, and all of that absolutely free to enjoy. And really that sense of kind of inclusion and community is very strong in this particular festival as well. They're particularly taking an approach of being dementia friendly, and they've designed some of their events and some of their initiatives to be as welcoming and accessible as possible. They're going to have a specially designed workshop for people living with dementia, as well as a briefing on how to make your choir dementia friendly, and a special performance from the unique Forget Me Not Choir, who I know have kind of attracted some kind of attention over the last couple of years, and I know they sang with Brendan Grace as well in years gone by, and they're going to be there tomorrow too. So sounds like the stage is set for a lot of fun. Mountjoy Square Park is the place to be tomorrow afternoon, and all the details on that at gospelrising.com.
Excellent, yeah, and of course a connection to Near FM with the Forget Me Nots is Karen Meenan. Karen is very much involved with the Forget Me Nots choir, and does a number of programs here in relation to you know, people living with dementia, and so we have a little connection to that one as well. And Ken, another connection. Ken was talking about Paul McCartney turning 80, and look what happens. The Beatles turn up at the Helix. Well, not quite.
Well, then, I don't know, Declan, can we say that the Beatles are turning up at the Helix?
Well,
but certainly
nearly.
The RTE Concert Orchestra have decided to celebrate the birthday and throw, I guess, a little bash of their own at the Helix Theatre at TCU tonight. So Paul McCartney himself is, of course, turning 80, as Ken referenced, and the RTE Concert Orchestra, under the baton of David Brophy, who'll be familiar to many now from lots of his TV work and everything else, they are delving into one of the most extraordinary of all songwriting catalogues and the music of what is without doubt one of the most iconic music groups of all time. The concert kicks off at 8 o'clock tonight, and it's going to feature classic songs from the likes of Eleanor Rigby to Yesterday to The Long and Winding Road, Hey Jude, Penny Lane and lots more besides. And I can just hear them stringing the bows, and you know, when you take a kind of a concert orchestra approach to some of those pieces, I'm sure it's going to be a real treat, a real feast for the senses there.
Yeah.
I mean, the RTE Concert Orchestra, you know, it barely needs mentioning, I suppose. They've won huge reviews and plaudits and awards, and they've packed houses for their concerts, and they've taken that kind of approach as well to celebrating some of the great popular musicians and artists. The likes of Leonard Cohen and David Bowie have gotten the concert orchestra treatment, so tonight it's the turn of the Beatles. And audience members are invited to join them live and join in all the fun there. Tickets are priced from £13.50. They're available online at thehelix.ie or from the Helix Theatre there at DCU.
A very reasonable price, I would suggest, for what will be a fantastic evening. And you say you can't beat that orchestral sound. Really spectacular.
It'll be a special one.
Yeah,
for sure.
Will indeed. Now, the Smithfield FLA is happening.
Yeah, this is a new one as well, and I think another sense of just that kind of community spirit that's been put into events happening right across Dublin and across the country as well, particularly at the moment. It just seems to be a really busy time. Smithfield FLA is a new free folk and traditional music event, and it's tuning up right about now down at Smithfield Square to present a packed programme of live music from a range of talented Irish musicians this weekend. It's Dublin City Centre's Smithfield Square, I should say, is Dublin City Centre's largest dedicated event space, and this weekend it's playing host to the Smithfield FLA. This year's FLA is the first such event of its kind to take place there at the Square, and it's going to feature musicians the likes of Cormac Begley, Louise Mulcahy, Fingal Mummers, and lots more, and lots of rising Irish music stars who have, you know, really kind of grown their profile and are all going to be taking part in the FLA there this weekend. They have a number of stages. There'll be a European folk dance Kaylee as part of the event, a workshop in Shannos dancing for beginners, which I don't know if that would tempt Ken's twinkle toes there, but you never know. A performance from Kion Tori Clune Tarth, a celebration of traveller music and culture, and lots more there too. And as we like to say on this programme, all of the music is free to enjoy, and it kicks off from 12 midday each day. So it's happening right now down there at the Square, and again from 12 o'clock tomorrow. It's been presented by Dublin City Council, and so check out their website at dublincity.ie or any of their social media channels, or if you just search for Smithfield FLA, FLEADH, that's where you'll find all the details.
Ken, would you fancy having a go at the Shannos dancing?
The answer is as simple as no.
again, I thought Ken would be up promoting things.
You know? And you know, the old one, you know, what's the best instrument or best way to play a boar and penknife?
Well, it's one way of doing it.
Absolutely. Now, we have just time to squeeze in one more, Sarah. So tell us about why we should be planning our street feast right now.
Yeah, this was a nice, really straightforward idea, I guess. But again, really, very much celebrating that sense of community. So Street Feast is Ireland's national day of community lunches, and it's all about bringing community together and tackling the sense of isolation that some might feel if there's new people have moved into your community, or it's you don't know your neighbours as well as you'd like to. Then next Sunday, June 26th, we'll see Street Feast celebrations taking place in villages, towns and cities across Ireland, and it's a great opportunity to get involved and to get to know your neighbourhood. The idea is simple, as I said, to get together with your neighbours, enjoy some conversation, camaraderie, maybe a few nice strawberries or a cup of tea or whatever you're having yourself, and all you need is a space where people can gather together. Feasts in the past have been organised in places from front gardens, the streets, greens, car parks, laneways, local parks, whatever you like, community centres, any of the above. So hosts are welcome to use their imagination to see where they'd like to host their 2022 Street Feast. And once you've picked your date and your place, you can register your Street Feast online at streetfeast.ie, and you can apply there for your free party pack, which includes bunting, posters, invites and a brilliant DIY guide to get you started on hosting your feast. So no excuses, now's the time to get planning. It's taking place next Sunday, so you might like to jump onto streetfeast.ie. You can get all the details there and register your feast.
Excellent. As usual, Sarah, thanks a million for doing a great job on the events for us, and we will talk to you next week again.
Thanks, Declan. Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Yeah, all right. Now we have Lord Mayor Alison Gilliland standing by, is going to talk to Ken after a short piece of music. And Alison has co-written a book with her co-writer Clodagh Finn, and the book is called Her Keys to the City, Honouring the Women Who Made Dublin. That's just after this.
Sitting on a fence, ain't got enough dough to pay the rent. I'm flat broke, but I don't care. I strut right by with my tail in the air. Straight cat strut, I'm a
please cat.
I'm a feeling Casanova. Dinner from a garbage can. Ow. Yeah, don't cross my path.
This is Near FM on 90.3. Hi there, I'm Ken Kilbride, and I'm with Declan Ralph and Sarah Birmingham. You're very welcome back to the programme. Don't forget, if you have anything you would like us to feature, you can contact us on air at text 087-69-44500. That's text 087-69-44500. Or email us anytime at all during the week on weekinreview@near.ie. Her Keys to the City, Honouring the Women Who Made Dublin, is a new book written by Lord Mayor Alison Gilliland and Clodagh Finn. Just four women were among the 83 people given the freedom of the City of Dublin since the award was inaugurated in 1876. And three of those four were actually granted the award this week. And now to find out more about it and to get an insight into the book, I'm now joined by the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Alison Gilliland. Good afternoon, Lord Mayor. How are you? And very welcome to the programme.
I'm very well, Ken. Thank you. And thanks for featuring the book on your programme. It's a great honour to have it, I suppose, eventually published, but also that those listening to Near FM get a chance to hear a little bit about it.
Oh, thanks, it's our pleasure. But just before we begin, as I say, you're only the 10th woman to be elected Lord Mayor of Dublin. So how's the year gone for you?
The year's gone really well. Unfortunately, it's coming to an end. I've tried to do as much as I can, particularly for women. It was one of my stated priorities to enhance the visibility of women and girls. Yes, I'm the 10th female. The first female was Kathleen Clark, the widow of Thomas Clark, back in 1939. So in those sort of 82 years, there's been 10 of us.
That's it. And just in terms of that, and I mean, looking at it, you know, the genesis of the book, you know, lying and wanting in some way to address the obvious gender imbalance. So in terms of your term in office, what would have inspired you to write this book?
Well, initially, it was around the freedom of the city. And as you pointed out there, only 4 of the 83 recipients of the freedom of the city were women. And it is very much the highest honour of the city. And I believe it's the highest privilege a Lord Mayor has in proposing people to receive the freedom of the city. I had originally thought, given the gender imbalance, that I could go back in time and award a freedom to a woman for every year a man got one in the past. But unfortunately, you have to be alive to receive the freedom of the city, because the key role of somebody who has the freedom is to defend the city. So when I couldn't do that, I still wanted in some way to address that imbalance. So I decided to profile 80 women, to profile that balance and give them an acknowledgement and, in the sense, her keys to the city.
Well, obviously, I mean, in looking at 80 women, so that's a lot of people. We'll know some of them, but maybe you could give me just an example of some of maybe the people we don't know that have been inspired over a number of years to create change in Dublin.
Yeah, it goes back right to the first one, which is Anne Devlin, who was a nationalist and heroine. She was born in 1780. And she was very much involved with Robert Emmet and would have been inspired by him, but still had a role that was very much hers around nationalism and working with the poor. A lady who has, I suppose, come slightly to our attention more recently was Sarah Cecilia Harrison. And yes, I suppose she resonates with me because she was the first female Dublin City Councillor. And interesting, she was also an incredible portrait artist and would have been one of the go-to people of the day in the 1800s to have your portrait done. We go through, I suppose, all the ages and all the decades. And we have a woman called Nora Herlihy, who would have been a school principal, but she is probably unknown for setting up the credit union system. In the first one was in Dunor Credit Union. And, you know, from there, as we know, the credit union movement has grown, but also is very much the focus of a lot of our communities and has enabled people to get small loans that really have changed their lives. And what we didn't know until we went, I suppose, looking into Nora's background, is her niece is actually Marion Finucane, who also features in the book. So I couldn't really pick out 4 or 5 for you, but there's so many that are just amazing women that we won't have heard of. Some we will, but the majority, I think, will be quite unknown to most people.
Well, I have to say, I mean, just looking at your work over the last year, I have to say you've been one of the most public Lord Mayors we've had in a long time. So where did you get the time to write this, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, You mentioned the lady's name at the beginning who actually was key to this book, and that is Clodagh Finn. And Clodagh is an author and a journalist. She writes a weekly column with The Examiner. And if people are on Twitter, they might recognize the hashtag Through Her Eyes. Every day she features women from our past. So I really joined forces with Clodagh, and it was Clodagh that put everything together. She did all the research. She was the main writer of the book. We also had a fantastic woman called Rowena, who also wrote and did a lot of the contributions, Rowena Walsh. And interestingly, and I think this is one of the things I love about the book, Ken, so many family members of those women, and indeed some colleagues, came forward and wrote about their family member or their colleague. We have Maeve Binchy's niece wrote a piece on her, and we have a lovely young woman who's actually quite of today's day, Dr. Eivin Grokran, who was only born in 1975, but sadly died last year. She was a zoologist, groundbreaking badger researcher, and she is remembered by one of her colleagues. So we got great support to write this book, and particularly when it came to illustrating the book. We wanted it to be a nice book. I had the idea of a nice sort of coffee table, small book that you could dip in, dip out of, that would be very attractive. So we needed photos. And again, those family members came forward with photos or archives. So while the idea might have been mine originally, an awful lot of work was done by other people.
I mean, as I say, one of the things that it has struck me personally is that, you know, as you're saying, there's 83 people who've been given the freedom of the city. And there was only one up to this week, which was Mother Teresa. So how come nobody noticed that there was no woman that got the keys to the city?
There were actually four women that got the freedom of the city. So we would have way back in the 1800s, a lady called Margaret Sandhurst. She was a suffragette. And she got the freedom along with her husband, James. Then we had the Crown Princess Akihito, who was actually on a visit to Ireland with her husband, the Crown Prince. And both of them got the freedom. Maureen Potter, the fabulous entertainer, also got it. And then, as you rightly mentioned there, it was Mother Teresa. Aung San Suu Kyi did get the freedom of the city, but that was rescinded because of her political activities. And then 5 years ago, Michelle and Barack Obama were proposed for the freedom of the city, but they've never actually signed the roll of honour. When I became Lord Mayor, I always knew I was going to give it. If I was going to give it, it would be to a woman. And I suppose I chanced my hand a little bit, or chanced my arm a little bit, and proposed three women. So we had the wonderful Alva Smith, who has been to the fore of so many of Ireland's progressive change, particularly around women's rights and LGBT rights. Then we had Professor Mary Aiken, who is a cyber psychologist, and her focus is very much keeping people safe online, particularly children. And she would have a very strong advocate of children's rights online. And then a lady, I suppose, who we all know across the city of Dublin, and that's the wonderful Kelly Harrington, such an inspiration and role model for her local community, and also an Olympian gold medalist in boxing. So they were my three choices, and we had a beautiful ceremony last Saturday night here in the round room.
Okay, well, thanks very much for coming along today and explaining to us about that, and, you know, the keys for city. And it looks to be a great book, and it's certainly going to be interested in getting a copy myself. And if anybody else was interested in getting a copy, where would you get it?
It's currently available online. If you look at any of the Lord Mayor's social media, we'll be posting that. And then it will be in the shops, we hope, from early July.
Great. Well, thanks very much for that. And I hope you enjoyed the year, and we enjoyed having you.
Thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate that.
And thanks a million to you, Lord Mayor, for taking the time to talk to us here on The Week in Review. We know that you're very busy. And thanks a million, Ken, as well.
Now, I want to let you know about some jobs and volunteering opportunities that are available locally. I take these from the activelink.ie website, where there are literally hundreds of jobs and opportunities every single week. In fact, this week, there are 32 requests for volunteers and 359 job offers. The volunteering opportunity to highlight to you first, Community Law and Mediation are seeking volunteer administrators for their Dublin offices. The voluntary role will assist with the following duties: reception cover, data entry and filing, photocopying and coordination of meetings, booking rooms, etc. Now, the hours preferably are a minimum of 10 hours per week, and they're looking for a minimum commitment for 6 months. Now, these positions are based here in Coolock, actually beside us here in the Northside Civic Centre in Dublin 17. And if you want to apply for them, you need to send your CV and a short cover email or letter to Ross Palmer. And Ross's email is rpalmer@communitylawandmediation.com.
Dot.ie. The job offer to highlight this week is one for a social care worker job. It's a permanent job in North County Dublin, and the new role is described as a social care worker that will provide the adolescent service users with a safe therapeutic environment where they can develop emotionally and physically. You will work in conjunction with colleagues and managers to implement care plans to a very high standard. You will also ensure young people feel cared for and take an individualized approach to responding to their needs. Now, what do you need to succeed in this role? Well, to be successful as a social care worker in this particular role, you will have a QQI Level 7 qualification in social care or another related field. You will need 2 years of experience working in residential settings with children. You'll do 2 24-hour shifts per week and have flexibility around your availability. You should also have a full driver's license, a strong knowledge of social policy and child protection legislation would also make you a strong candidate. And if you're interested in that role, or you'd like to have a confidential conversation about your career and the next steps you need to take, well, then you can contact Eamon, and you can get Eamon at eamon.galligan@hayes.com. That's H-A-Y-S. They're the recruitment people. eamon.galligan@hayes.com. Well, there you have it. That's it for this week for The Week in Review. Thanks a million to all our contributors to the programme this week. And as always, if you want to get in touch, well, the best way to do that is on Twitter. At NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. So from Sarah, Ken and myself, Declan Ralph, we'll be back at the same time, 12:30, Saturday lunchtime. See you soon on the radio. Bye for now. Bye-bye.